Hello, everyone, and welcome to the GMS Magazine podcast. This is just a content warning. In this episode, we are going to talk about romance, and there are some mentions of incest and rape. Also, there are some off-color jokes, so your discretion is advised. Thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy it.
Hello there, listener. This is GMS Magazine. I'm your host, Sean Harris, and this is Paco Garcia.
Yes, hello, this is me.
And with apologies to the aromantic listeners in the audience, this particular episode is going to be about romance.
And this is why I'm going to be talking like this all the time during the episode, because this is my romantic voice. This is my saucy voice. This is, no, I'm not going to be doing that. Come on, this is bullshit.
So, well, I guess when this comes out, it should be, well, Valentine's Day is on Sunday.
Yes.
So it should come out that week or the week after.
Oh, no, it's going to come out tomorrow. I mean, we are recording. Hello, listeners, by the way. We are recording on the 9th of February. And tomorrow, I am going to finish work at 3 p.m. on the dot. I am going to come home and I am going to edit the shit out of the podcast, which means that I'm not going to do any editing because I barely ever do any editing at all. And I'm going to upload it to make sure that all our advice about romance in role-playing games is completely and utterly ready for this Sunday when you will be able to romance the hell out of anybody that allows you to do so, because doing it unconsensually would be like really and seriously cool uncool. So don't bloody do it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So to give you an idea of what we're going to talk about, first we're going to talk about why romance in role-playing games. We're going to talk about some of our favorite and least favorite romance tropes, do's and don'ts for romance at the game table, and actual games with the major romantic theme. So I guess, Paco, because I know, I guess I want to ask you, I guess we can get started talking, like, why include romance in roleplay?
Because it's part of life.
Okay.
simple as that. I think romance is part of any culture at some level in some format or another, and the possibility of exploring what is it like to develop feelings and, you know, a relationship with another creature is such a beautiful thing that I don't understand why anybody would want to avoid it. Well, I do understand why, but it would be very controversial of me to say. Because it's part of life, because it's wonderful and beautiful. And it's a lovely, lovely thing to do.
Mm, true. And it's, I think romance as opposed to like romantic relationships, like friendship, you know, that has that, it often has that equality there that's kind of missing in a lot of important relationships. Like, it's not king subject or boss employee or even, what do you call it, parent child.
Hmm.
You know, there's always like one top bottom kind of relationship, like an unequal power balance. But with romance, you know, by nature of the type of feelings involved, it's a bit more, a lot of times, a bit more equal. That doesn't mean, like, now that I'm talking, of course, strictly about requited romances, like requited feelings, like where two or more people love each other, as opposed to one of them in love with the other and the other one is like not having it. That's okay too, but we can talk about that in a bit. But like when we're talking about two or more people in an actual romantic relationship, you know, you have that balance of like that balance because of the feelings involved. Sort of like with friendship, you know, it's, well, yeah, the specifics of the relationship might involve like different power balances, but overall, because of the feelings involved and the bond that they share, it's like they're, you know, it's understood to be a relationship between equals. But then of course, there's like, well, what's the appeal of romance beyond that though? is it about getting it off? It's like, no, please God, I hope not. I don't know, it's just the feelings are so intense. So it becomes interesting to me by default. I don't know, what about you? I mean, yes, it's a part of life, but like...
No, but I agree. I mean, I think the thing about... for me, the difference between romance and friendships is the dynamics. It's mm-hmm. it's a very different dynamic, because when you want to build a friendship, you don't necessarily want to build a life in common or a future in common that involves a level of intimacy. Mm-hmm. That the intimacy is different. But when it's about romance, there is something that to me in relationships is a very, very beautiful thing to do, and some people find it really scary, and is vulnerability.
Right.
And I'm talking, I should say, and people who follow the podcast and follow this for a while should know me, I am a relationships counselor. I did it for years in the UK for Relate. So for me, the dynamics of a relationship, you know, of a romantic relationship, are completely different from those of a friendship. And to be able to share with somebody that vulnerability, that putting yourself before that person, you know, the well-being of that person matters to you more than your own well-being. To be able to let yourself loose to explore those feelings that otherwise you wouldn't have,
mm-hmm.
it's very enriching. It really does help. But of course, we're talking about characters. And mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned, in role-playing games, the beautiful thing about romance is that it allows to add an extra layer of dynamics, either within the group or within the game itself.
Right.
That opens an awful lot of beautiful possibilities for role-play, for adventuring, for anything, really.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yes to everything you said. it's, how should I say? Yeah, it's like a whole world of relationship dynamics that just open up.
Correct.
And it's like, and this is no slight to people whose interest in romance is nil, or whose definition of romance is not, you know, the conventional one. And we can talk about unconventional romance once we start talking about romantic tropes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But like, but yeah, it's like, I'm sort of like, I'm trying to figure out, like, any kind of role-playing scenario that does not immediately become more complex by adding romance to it. Especially if, like, it's like, and I'm not trying to downplay friendships when I say this, but like, it's different when it's your best friend versus your spouse. You know, like, regardless of what happened, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
I think friendship allows for a lot more space between people.
Yes, definitely.
And in a way that can actually be healthier. I am not saying that it allows for more space, and therefore it doesn't mean as much. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it allows for more space. And on the one hand, it might be like less overtly intimate, but again, like I said, that actually might be healthier. That distance can be healthy versus a situation which I've seen so many times, and you've probably seen so many times, where people who are in love decide to move in together, and then it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're stuck together.
Yes.
Like, you feel for them, but it's like, oh man. And especially because, like, a lot of breakups happen over money anyway. Speaking of romance, because this is not a trope thing, but I just want to add this kind of particular insight. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about romance in isolation from the societies that people live in, by the way. I think it's because it's like, I love the new Little Woman film, because they call attention to that, how much of romance is shaped by the societies we live in and our understanding of what's romantic and what's romantic on paper, which is, let's go away together regardless of the consequences. And I understand that, you know, I was forced to read Romeo and Juliet too. It's still like, you know, what happens when that relationship hits cold, hard reality, you know, there's that too. So, but that goes back to my original point where it's like, you know, regardless of the situation, it immediately becomes more complex when you add a romantic dynamic to it.
Yes. As I said, the thing though that I have to, I think we have to be a little bit specific about this, is that complex doesn't necessarily have to mean complicated.
Right.
Okay. Let's make this clear. It doesn't mean that the game that you're playing, if you add some romance to it, sadly is going to have a lot more hurdles, a lot more difficulties, that everything is going to become unbearably impossible to play. It is not necessarily the case.
Right.
Does it become more complex? Well, yes, because suddenly your character is gonna have to think about the party and the partner. If the partner is outside the party, then the character is going to have to think about their own safety, so they can go back to that person, you know, and they're going to have to think about motivations. For example, the last D&D game I played, I had a halfling ranger, and he had a son, a son that lived with his father, and the father was a dragonborn very far away. That halfling was adventuring so he could provide with whatever it is that that child needed for the rest of his life, so he didn't have to become an adventurer. So when the moment came that that character had to choose, for instance, about what loot is going to be shared, even though for me, as Paco, it wasn't the most convenient, but as the character, he would always say, I want the gold. I want gems. Don't worry about magical items. You keep those because they have less monetary value than gems. And what I want is those gems and that gold to send it to my son. So suddenly that changed an awful lot, the group and how we looked at things, because the group understood that I stayed, you know, doing ranged attacks more often because I was weaker, because I didn't have that many magical items. But they also understood that because I was doing that, they were getting stronger magical items, and therefore they could take more risks and develop their characters in a stronger manner, which is what they wanted to do. So something as silly as that, but suddenly everything changes and everybody was happy about it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that was an unseen romance.
Right. Yeah. And the thing about romance and or relationships in general, but the way it should happen at the table, it's like, for instance, in a lot of adventure gaming situations, the smart thing to do would be to walk away. Smart people do not get involved in capers because there are too many ways for them to go wrong, too many ways to get caught, too many ways to get killed. It's just like anybody who's intelligent and conscientious would probably not go for that. You know, it's like, well, unless like the prize is exceptionally like almost irresistible, you know. But and I mean more than like, okay, you're gonna risk your neck for 300 gold pieces. No. I mean set for life good. So but with romance, as with any kind of a really powerful relationship, you can't ignore the story. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, you can't just be, well, I'm just going to, it's just going to be my character doing this thing, getting themselves stronger, more powerful. For what purpose, you know, that has nothing to do with any other character in the story. Like, no, you have this connection and it means something. Now your choices mean something. And you're saying something with every choice you make. And of course, since this bond is with another character, that character has their own needs, their own desires, their own way of, their own perspectives, their own way of doing things too. So it's like, okay, you can put that romance, you can put a love interest on your character sheet. But that doesn't mean that person is going to be waiting for you to come back.
Mm.
You know, like they have nothing better to do with their life. So I'm just saying, you know, I'd be like, I'm just saying, GM note. you get out of that relationship, what you put into it.
Well, I know how it is because, you know, that ranger lost his husband, and it didn't, you know, he's kept looking after his son. But eventually he became involved with a demi dragon in Chult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's had a fetish for dragonborns and draconids in general.
Okay.
And I just found it really exciting and sexy. You know, I'd never seen any of them. I thought, oh my God, you're so sexy. And it was like a fetish. You know, I loved them. So he became involved with this demi dragon. And that was really helpful because thanks to that relationship, we were able to get places that otherwise we wouldn't have been able to get that easily. So that worked out. It saves us from doing an awful lot of dice rolling and combating and, you know, sneaking around, which was great.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Like, I think I noticed too, like when both of us are talking, we're talking about like actually putting the romance in the game,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just saying, oh yeah, I have a girlfriend, boyfriend, significant other, and they're just in the background doing what they do or whatever. And it's like, does that count? Me personally, I don't think so, but
It's I don't know, it's kind of diluted.
Mm-hmm.
Does it count? I suppose it could if you actually think about it and keep it in mind and you allow that background to actually influence your actions and your motivations. In that case, well, I suppose it would count. But I don't know. It would be like having any other goal. I don't know. I wouldn't feel that was satisfactory. It wouldn't be enough for me as a player to run right. this with that. I don't know. I would find it weak.
Mm. Yeah, I don't blame you. So, I know I listed this third, but I'm actually going to talk about it here because since we're talking about how we play the romance at the gaming table. What are some do's and don'ts
for romance,
your games, dear listener?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I guess right off the top, consent is key.
Yes.
You know, if you want to play something out, then of course, people who are participating in that romance, you need their permission. But what else do you really talk about? Do's and don'ts for romance at the gaming table.
Okay, do's is, as far as I'm concerned, is be upfront about it.
Mm-hmm.
And don'ts is do not ever mistake romance for sex.
Mm.
Okay, they don't necessarily have to go hand in hand, even though sometimes they go hand in hand. But it doesn't, a romance around the table does not have to include sex, if you don't want to, if you feel uncomfortable, or do if you want to. I mean, I definitely had some full-on sex with my dragon, demi-dragon, because that's the kind of group I play with, and it was absolutely fine, and everybody it was okay with it. It was consensual, not just among the characters, but also among the players. That worked. But yeah, be upfront about it. You know, if you want to do it, don't sneak around it or anything. I said, you know, I want to have talk to your GM about it. Talk to the rest of the people about it. You know, be upfront. I think that helps a lot.
Right. I would say, as a dude, expand your horizons of romance. People of all genders, all sizes, all colors, all ages find romance. And you'd be surprised who they find it with. So don't feel like, so I say there's a door into a corridor. Don't feel confined to the, you know, Hollywood blockbuster model. It doesn't have to be slender, attractive, cisgender, heterosexual white people who are also able-bodied. It doesn't have to be that. If you want to talk about a great place to really introduce some representation, romance is a great place to do that.
I love that. I really dig that.
Great place to do that, because it, number one, it's like, it's not just this one diverse character being diverse by themselves. It's they're in relationship. Like, relationships are a great way to build. I mean, oh, I'm a huge fan of like relationships, like really important relationships mattering to a story or building a story. But yeah, the romance is a great way to do that. It's like, it's all of the married couples are, you know, a man and a woman of roughly the same age, or a guy and a woman, and there's like, there's a 15-year age gap where the guy is always the older one. Or there are no people over 40 meeting anybody. It starts to look weird when you know, it starts to look kind of weird and like dystopian. If that's what you're going for, great, but like, I'm thinking, like, if you think about it, it's like, if everybody, if relationships looked like they do in Hollywood movies, you'd be kind of freaked out by it. Because it's like, it's too homogenous, you know, it's too homogeneous, it's too one note. It is like, no, real life is much more various than that. So please do not feel like you need to limit yourself to a couple. Like, poly shippers are so starved for positive representation. So a healthy poly ship, if you want to do that, great. So yeah, it's just, like, yeah, think beyond it. Don't go beyond the you know, the white picket fence or the Romeo and Juliet. You know, make it. This is a place where things get really, really interesting, you know, because when they say love is blind, it's like you can never tell who goes for what. And there you go.
I really like that, because I think it opens the possibility of thinking about the people that we have around us in a different manner. So, for example, even if you wanted to do in-game cross-species romance, you could find, if you're playing, I don't know, a wizard, you could find, I'm going to say a human wizard, and suddenly you found a UNT wizard. And that UNT is so magically gifted that you feel attracted to that. And that is what makes you fall in love with a completely different and alien creature. You know, and thinking about what is it that would make me fall in love with somebody. Because it's not just the physical appearance that makes us fall in love with people. I mean, sometimes it definitely helps get the initial attraction, but it's not usually what makes us fall in love with people. There's a lot more than that. So if you stop to think about, if your character is so-and-so, and you find another character, NPC or whatever, that is also so-and-so, the likelihood is that you would find that person akin to you and probably end up finding that creature attractive. You know, and the kind of creature that you want to have a future with. So think, I that's one thing that I would say, you know, do think in other terms that have nothing to do with physical attraction to develop romantic relationships in your games. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, do think beyond the purely physical. Especially if we're talking about fantasy or science fiction where literally anything is possible. I mean, you can, I mean, think about it, like, in fantasy, destiny or fate is practically a force of nature, you know? So why wouldn't that, it was like, okay, you're destined to save, especially, like, I'm not saying the game has to be about this, but, like, okay, if there's a thing about who's going to save the world, there's also a thing about who's going to get with who, you know? And that will be interesting to play out. Like, if you go to the Oracle thinking, you go, it's like, okay, what's my fate? What is my destiny? What heroic adventure or quest am I supposed to complete? It turns out, like, you're going to marry a baker. Like, what? You're going to fall in love with and marry a baker. What? That'd be so... I would be that mean in my games. Sort of like, yeah, you're going to settle down, you're going to marry a baker, you're going to have this many children. Huh? But no. Like, what about my destiny? all that epic fantasy stuff. And I just make it about this thing. Or you have the chosen one, like in Avatar: The Last Airbender, when Aang went to the fortune teller at Wu and was like, so what do I do? And she's like, oh my gosh, you're going to have, it's this huge thing, this big fate of yours. You're going to, like, the fate of the world hangs in doubt. It's, you know, it's all up to you and this, that, and the third. And then he's like, yeah, I already know about that. But does it say anything about Katara liking me? that thing right there, it's like, that is the kind of thing I want. That would be so awesome to put in the game. It's like, yeah, we know about the prophecy. I mean, but what about Katara? Is it,
exactly.
We have a chance. It's like, oh, God. But yeah, so yes, think beyond that. And it's like in sci-fi, if you want to talk about science fiction, I mean, think about, like, I mean, even now we have, like, trying to have, like, scientific ways of trying to figure out how, who's going to get together and why. So, like, it might be some kind of ultra tech where it's written in your genetic code who you're going to find the perfect person for you. Or it could be, like, there was a thing in Demolition Man, the film, where it turned out that Sylvester Stallone's character had a genetic gift for knitting.
Oh.
Yeah, and they just had to bring that out of him.
Did you now?
Yeah. And he just, like, so they just, yeah, he actually made a sweater in, like, a night.
Oh, sorry. You said knitting.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I understood mating.
No.
Okay.
He tried. It didn't work.
Yeah. I remember that. That's something that they trained him in while he was in cryostasis.
Yes. So I'm just saying, any kind of situation like that, it can, you know, it's like the possibilities are limitless. Don't forget that. That's my don't. Don't forget the possibilities are limitless.
And one thing as well, one of the don'ts is, and don't force it.
Yes.
You know, if the group is not comfortable about it, if the GM is not prepared for it, don't force it. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, I love it. I really think it's a wonderful playing tool and a great resource, but it is not worth the fun of the rest of the team. Right. So if you see that the GM, not necessarily that the GM is uncomfortable with it, because sometimes people are not uncomfortable. It's just they don't know how to do it or what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Don't force it. You know, just say, I'm in love with this, or I want to have a relationship with that. And, you know, draw the curtain, draw the veil and leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't overdo it, because it doesn't become fun and it's not worth it.
Right. There's also It's not really a don't. It's more like a, like, again, we say do get people's consent. But I do want to say, like, don't. Because it's a certain way that I get it, all relationships are not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, like, don't push too hard on the toxic stuff, especially abusive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, yes, you can portray a relationship as unhealthy without it being abusive. And, you know, and I get it. It's just, like, I can role play a bad breakup, but I don't necessarily want to get slapped in the face with abuse. Again, it goes back to our point about getting people's consent, but, like, and I guess this is more of a do, but do be aware, like, that those, that abuse exists, and, you know, and don't surprise people with that. You know, make liberal use of the X card and whatnot. It's just, you know, something, yes, and I know it's angst, and I love it sometimes, but I just don't want to be, you know, if I want a beer pretzel game, or if I just want to unwind with something that's fun and silly, I don't want to get punched in the face with that, you know. And it's like, and then I get, if I'm in a mood for that kind of thing, and I can mentally prepare myself, that's one thing. But I don't want to get surprised by, like, by abuse, and especially if it's played as a joke.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Any kind of abuse or assault or whatever. It's like, yeah, please don't play those things with you.
Agree. Definitely agree. I don't like that.
Yeah. So, I guess we talked enough about, like, do's and don'ts. I mean, you can look this stuff up. It's all over the place. And it's not just, again, as Paco said, it's not just about sex. It's about romance in general. Like, any kind of, like, intimate relationship, you want to tread carefully on something. Especially when it's, when you're dealing with a kind of, you know, like, we're dealing with something like Call of Cthulhu or World of Darkness. It's like, you know, this is not TV 7 fair. You know, this is not for children, and it often includes some pretty messed up stuff. So, you know, go in there and be prepared for people to say no to certain things, and, you know, and don't try to, like Paco said, don't try to force it. And don't play the really bad stuff for jokes.
No, never do that.
Yeah.
And you know, one last rule that I would like to remind people is, if you wouldn't do it in real life, don't do it in game either.
Mm. Absolutely. Okay, so on a more lighthearted note, favorite and least favorite romance tropes.
Ooh.
we got the standard, you know, we have the star-crossed lovers thing, we have the enemies to lovers, friends to lovers, what else? Or whatever. Well, we can come up with our own too.
So. Okay, I'm going to say about my most hated trope ever. I really see it, and it's cringy. Siblings who discover their siblings after they fall in love with each other.
Okay.
Oh my God. Please don't. Just don't. Okay, I'm sorry. Luke and Leia just had everything they needed for that. And that was enough. We didn't, after that, we don't need any more. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, I hate that trope. It's like so. Oh, come on. Seriously, that's just torture. Why would you do that to your characters? It's dreadful, absolutely dreadful. So don't do that.
Surprise, it's incest.
Yeah, exactly. No, incestuous love that. Oh, my God, but now I'm fighting with my feelings because I still love him, but he's my brother. But should I or should I not? Because my brother and I love him. No, sorry. No. No. Bad.
Sorry, Daenerys fans.
Yes, sorry.
Sorry, Daenerys fans.
It's just a bit. Oh, Jesus, no.
Sorry, John Harris fans. And I'm not even a Johnson shipper. I'm just saying, it's just the whole surprise is incest thing. I'd rather not. And you can tell me, oh, it's justified and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't care. Just... yes, I know. But it's a bit icky. It's icky and not in a how wicked and tantalizing kind of way. It's not even fun. It's like, yuck.
Yeah. Yes, and you know, I'm gonna say this out loud, listeners. If you find, you know, that kind of thing, and you think, I would seek help. Yeah, okay, get out there and seek help. Seriously, trust me, you need it. Trust me, relationships counselor here. I know you're crazy. Go and find some help, please. Do. Thank you.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
Oh my god.
I shouldn't say those things, shouldn't I?
So are you still in relationship counseling, or is it?
I'm not counseling. And to be honest, if I had, and I haven't, okay, I've never had incestual relationship in the room when I was practicing. But if I did, I would probably suggest that they go into, you know, kind of deeper therapy than I would be able to provide. I would suggest a specialist. You know, in psychosexual therapy or what have you. But I would say, yeah, there is something wrong with you. Sorry, I'm sorry. It's too deep. You need a psychiatrist. And castration. I wouldn't say that.
So you'd have a field day with Jamie and Cersei, wouldn't you?
but the thing is, they're psychopathic. So it makes sense because they are psychopaths anyway. They do present from the, you know, psychological profile. They do present some egalomaniac, you know, as in histrionic senses and psychopathic tendencies that would make perfect sense that they live only for their own indulgence. And therefore, it makes sense that they don't care if they are siblings, you know, because they live for their indulgence. So in that, it makes sense that they are like that. And also, it's a very long family tradition for them. You know, that's why their mother had so many miscarriages and stuff like that. So that happens.
Oh, okay.
That turned out nice, didn't it? I bet you're glad you asked that question now, Sean.
apologies, dear listener.
Yeah, sorry.
I know. But yeah, like, I'm thinking romance tropes. Maybe least favorite romance trope, slap, slap, kiss. I can't stand it. where every time, like, and it's always a man and a woman, and it's always she can't stand him. She tells him she can't stand him. She acts like she can't stand him. But oh no, it's not really that. It's unresolved sexual tension. It's belligerent sexual tension. I'm like, no. No. She hates him. She acts like she hates him. She says she hates him. There's nothing sexual about that. Stop brainwashing girls with that shit. I hate the message it sends. I hate the way it like completely disregards what the woman clearly says she wants in order for like this dude who's behaving badly and have a shot with her. And it's like, no, he's a jackass. She hates him. Let's move on. It's like, oh God, it's like, it's almost, I can almost set a watch by it. They're going to hook up. They're going to hook up. I know. See, I told you. Like, oh God. There are too many to name in media. There's a certain ship and a certain franchise that I refuse to name because that fandom is that toxic. And I'm not going to name the name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to tell you to guess. Don't even bother. It's like, I know who it is. People who talk with me about it know who it is. But I'm just going to say, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but it's just like, no. A woman on, you know, a woman who, sometimes women just don't like a guy. We really just sometimes when we say we hate so-and-so, we mean it. And if we say, ugh, I can't stand that asshole, we mean it.
Mm.
Like, you might go, oh, but he's hot. He ain't that damn hot. I mean, it's like, nobody is so hot I would overlook them being an asshole to me in order to hook up with them. Yeah, so they could be an asshole right afterwards. And then I hate them again. It's like, no, no, thank you. It's no, no, stop that. No more. Enough.
Yeah, I definitely am with that. I don't like the kind of scenes where, oh, I didn't realize how much I liked you until you actually raped me, kind of situation. You know, so many times it happens. You know, and I don't mean full on rape, but how many times have we seen scenes of what you're describing? You know, I don't like you, I don't want to be with you, and the guy suddenly forces himself on the girl and kisses her, and then she looks at him lovingly and thinks, "Oh my God, I didn't realize how much I like you. You had to force yourself upon me for me to realize that I actually do like you." Yeah, I don't fall for that. I think that is complete bullshit when I say that. I really don't like it.
No way. Or if you're going to do that, make it fall apart badly. If you're going to do that, make it... This is one of them situations, like I said, like sometimes relationships are toxic, and it's... And if you have people's permission, it's okay to roleplay that. Like, if you want to roleplay it, make it toxic as hell. And it's like, yeah, I mean, the sex is great, but we don't really get along otherwise. Ew. Yeah. Like I said, people are complicated. Yes, sometimes that relationship does exist. But come on, it is not that prevalent. I mean, I can guarantee you, ask the women in your life, when have you ever said to a man, when have you thought about a man, I really hate this fucker, and secretly wanted to just bone it? Or did you secretly want to, like, take a baseball? Like, would you have sex with him or take a baseball bat to his head? Which would you rather do? You'd be surprised how many of us choose the baseball bat. Just, like, no. That guy's a complete sexist pig, and I hate him, and I can't stand him. But that means I want to sleep with him. Do you realize how that sounds? Oh, God.
I'm so with you there, definitely. You know, however, to go into the ones that we like, you know, a trope that it shows what an unrelentless and complete softy, sweet, twee idiot I am. The epiphany moment. I love the epiphany trope. When the character actually realizes that, no, it's not you I love, it's that other person, and that's the person I need to be with. Mm. When that's done properly, I love that. I really like that. I know, it's silly, isn't it? But it's one of those tropes that I think, especially if it's because they realize they love somebody of the same gender. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, the wife who leaves her husband because, you know, she truly wants to be with another woman, or the man mm-hmm. who wants to be with another man. Is that kind of scenarios where I thought, yeah, I love seeing people realizing that they want to be true to themselves because they have found love with the right person for them. I am a softie at times, you know, not if I have an incestuous relationship in front of me, but I am a softie. I can be very romantic and very tender sometimes, not very often, but I can.
Yeah, that's cute. I
cry sometimes on everything. Really, seriously, listeners, I do cry. Not now, though.
Not right now. Okay, another romance trope I like. Okay, I don't know how to explain this one, but Gomez and Morticia relationship goals. It's where, like, it's beyond happily married. It's, what was the way that, I wish I had, like, the notes with me, like, the note that was on the screenplay talking about the nature of the relationship between these two, but they are so passionate about each other that it's like frankly demonic. They are so passionate about each other, and they're so in love with each other, and they like it's almost like they're so horny for each other, and it's like like they just love it. It's not this. Look, it's Gomez and Morticia. Pick your genders, however, but it's like there's the one who's like, you know, very overt and extroverted in a way too, where it's like, and I love everything about this person. I would fight the sun for this person. I would die for this person. I would kill for this person and be completely happy. And then the other one is much more reserved, but still clearly passionate by the other one. And it's like, yes, this is what I want. This is that. It's like beyond ordinary. It's like this extraordinary, phenomenal, almost supernatural level of intensity and passion. And it's like relationship goals for me. So it's like, it's like, no, I don't give a damn about the dishes. I want the person who says, I will die for you. I will kill for you. Either way, what bliss. I love that.
I haven't thought about the relationship for very long time. I haven't seen the Addams Family for a very, very long time. But yeah, I can see what you mean. That's quite a good relationship they have in there, don't they? The two honey pastors.
Yeah, it's like they communicate. They're communicative, and they like they communicate and they support each other. I mean, yes, it helps that they're wealthy so to raise their children, but like it's strange how well they actually get along, and they're so ridiculously, obscenely, happily married, and not in a "oh, I'm happily married" on Instagram kind of way. It's they can't hide it. You can tell by how they interact with each other. And like, and it's so like, it'd be sickening if they were not like so goth. But like, it's just so like, oh my God, they're totally into each other. Like totally, deeply, irreversibly into each other.
Yep. I can see that. And yes, it's the thing is though, is a very difficult trope to actually replicate, because I cannot think of many other couples that reach the level of interaction and cohesion that Gomez and Morticia have. I would need to think about it for a while before I can find somebody who is that into each other for so good reasons.
Yeah, and then the weird thing, of course, is that individually as characters, they're still interesting. So it's like,
yeah,
it's like they as a couple, it's like they did it. It's like whoever wrote them, especially for the films, the ones with Angelica Houston and Raul Julia playing Morticia and Gomez, those people have either been married or observed a lot of people. That is not a thing that can like that you can just rely on other like just an accumulated lifetime of watching other films to portray in such a way. This is not like a meet cute kind of thing or a boy meets girl kind of thing where it's like they are the appropriate genders and breathe the same air, therefore they're hooking up. It's like, no, this is a long-term relationship. They've been together in the first movie, they have kids who are at least 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still over the moon for each other. And then another baby enters the picture in the second movie. And they're still over the moon for each other. So this is not like a new love. This is not a, you know, oh, this is the honeymoon phase. It's going to wear off. No,
you can tell it's never going to record. Never, ever going to wear off. Ever.
No, it's like they'll stop doing that like after both of them are dead. I'm not even going to say one of them. After both of them are dead.
Exactly.
But yeah, so what about you, Paco? Well, that's trope, you love. Because you have the, oh no, I love this person trope. So the eureka moment.
Yes. Yeah. No. I had my Eureka. The I want to leave you because I need to be with this other person. I think that is because it's such a difficult thing to do. It really is a difficult thing to do, and it's such a life changing thing to do as well. So, but then on the other hand, it's also a very cruel thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it is also very selfish. So it's I don't know. I just this is a trope that I really enjoy when I see it and it's done well. Mm-hmm. You know, it I don't know. I just the idea that somebody has found true love, even mm-hmm. if that means having to leave everything behind, it moves me very, very deeply.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what else? My God, it's so deep. So many tropes. Okay, here's one of my favorite tropes. This is so old-fashioned, I refuse to deny it. Beauty and the Beast, favorite trope. And I do it all the way up, and I pretty much just cut off. It's before the Beast becomes a prince. I don't know what it is about those stories, about like animal bridegroom stories or human mortal woman with other type creature of some sort. I don't know what it is, but or something monstrous. I just that really just hits me at it's the right note that really it hits me. It's just I guess because I like monsters in general.
Mm-hmm.
And romancing monsters just seems natural, but yeah, it's like Beauty and the Beast, and I don't mean the specific story by Charles Perrault or various iterations that came a little before, a little after. I mean that whole genre of story, where they don't become the handsome prince at the end. I really like that. I love it. It's mysterious and sexy and kind of dangerous. Love it to pieces. It's like it's one of the things where, okay, you can't go wrong unless you're the kind of person who doesn't understand this kind of story or mistakes the appeal of this kind of story, like thinking oh, there's something wrong with the women who like the story. It's often women who like the story, by the way. So yeah, I Beauty and the Beast, old fashioned as hell. There's a version of this story in virtually every culture on earth. Love this story. Can't get enough of it.
Fair enough. It's a good trope, I have to say. It's an interesting trope. However, there's one thing about it which it really irks me an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
And is when the author uses the woman as the cure.
Mm.
You know, and is the kind of, you know, every man needs a good woman for them to be a good man.
Right.
And it's a bit, yeah, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah, no.
No, that's not the point of the Beauty and the Beast. That really ain't the point at all. Like, at all. So that is a trope, you know, the woman is what keeps the man sane.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, that's kind of called codependency.
Her job in marriage is not to fix him.
Yeah,
exactly. Not to fix him. And I find it interesting because it's more something like more modern iterations of that story are inclined to do. The more ancient versions, not so much. It's just, okay, this is weird supernatural creature in the shape of some animal-like thing. You're married now. And or so to speak, and it's like how she deals with that, how she like gets to know this creature, and how she realizes that this creature is actually very kind to her, treating her well, and this and the third. She's not there to fix that creature. Just there's no like, oh, we're gonna break the curse or whatever. It's like, not really.
No,
not really. And then it's, the story gets so boring at the end, like when the Beast becomes a prince, it just gets so boring. And he looks boring, and I hate it.
Fair enough. I have nothing else to add to that, I have to say.
Any more romance tropes? It's like there's so many. I like, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but I really like the finding love later in life thing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, look, it doesn't always work when you're young. You make mistakes. You stay too long with the wrong person. It's the person who's totally wrong for you. And if you're going to talk about querying these kinds of narratives too, I mean, come on. Like, you know, there are tons of lesbians who got married and had kids and then realized, wait a minute, I like women. I don't like men. And then meet the right woman and, you know, flip that whole thing over. So I'm of course, because I'm also getting older, so I can't pretend I'm going to be like 23 forever. But like, I like those stories where like the unconventional people find love. You know, they're over 40 or a dark skinned person surrounded by pasty people, or they're like a different from a different culture, or what have you, something that would normally make them an outcast, but they find love anyway. Love that. I love it. Misfits in love, love it. Or someone who falls for the misfit. Yeah, that too.
I can see that. It's not something that is explored very often, is it? You don't see it very often in movies. You certainly don't see it very often in games. Well, that's for sure. You know, I can remember the last time I read a game that had an intergenerational couple.
Mm-hmm.
I really have no recollection of that at all. To be honest, I can't remember many times when people played that character that was, you know, advanced-aged character, unless they were an elf or a dwarf, in which case, I'm still a teenager, even the 150, but I'm a teenager. And look at me, my little stubble. So yeah, we don't see that very often, but yeah, I like that. That's a good one. I want to think about that one.
Yeah, it's like, especially for women, like men over 40. You know, it's like, but you'll see it. Women over 40, like, oh my God, they act like she was dried up and fell off the vine. She's dried up. She's practically dead. Apparently, it's like, no.
But the thing is, that is the way that our society sees women, isn't it? Because you think you see a man in his or 50s or 60s, and you see them with a girl in their 20s or 30s, and they are meant to be, you know, that's meant to be a sign of virility.
Right.
You know, how is he keeping her happy, kind of thing. But if it is the other way round, and you see a woman in her 50s or 60s, and then they have a man in their 20s or 30s, the usual portrayal of that is that he's either a rent boy or he is a gold digger.
Right.
Which is a bit, wow, that's kind of, you know, that sucks. That's horrible notion, you know, that a woman cannot be attractive when they're in their 50s. Look at bloody Helen Mirren, people. Just look at her.
It's like, I can name it off the top of my head. Helen Mirren, Viola Davis.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just, Viola Davis. I was just like, how? Viola Davis. I don't know how old Jennifer Lopez is, but like, it's like so many very ridiculously good looking. I was looking at Cobra Kai. I binged Cobra Kai last night.
Mm-hmm.
And the actress who played Daniel's girlfriend in the Karate Kid Part 2.
Oh, she's looking lovely.
She's like, yeah, I was gobsmacked. I was like, no way. and that's how it confirmed that I'm gay. No way. No, she's gorgeous. Michelle Yeoh, gorgeous. Gorgeous and over 50. And she can still kick your ass.
I bet.
It's just, ridiculous. It's like, y'all have to look past, like, you know, the, I don't want to say the modeling industry, because a lot of these women have a background in modeling, but, like, look, healthy, active women over 50 are going to look fucking fine. So, yeah, it's just like, how you, ridiculous? Like they act like these women just look like, just wilting on the vine. I'm like, nah. I'm pretty sure any of these women that we name can probably get anybody in their bed just by crooking their finger like this. there's no way. I don't know where we get this. And speaking of older men with younger women, my personal thing is like, what does he want with her? What can they possibly talk about? And it's like, look, I get it. You find love at any age there. It's like, sometimes you're 20 years older, younger than you intended. It happens. But like, if I see a man in his 60s with like a 19-year-old, I'm not even going to dignify that by calling her a woman. If you are like 63 and she's 19, what the fuck do you want with her? How does she enrich your life, man? I mean, what does she... they never talk about, oh, she's a wonderful conversationalist. Oh, actually, she's a kind of considerate human being, and I'm really inspired by her, or she's doing great things for the world, and that just really set my heart on fire. It's like, we know what that's really about. And it's just, you know, cynical and nasty. but that's just me.
Well,
but then, you know...
There is an awful lot of theory written about that, and there is one word that I would suggest people to look into if they so seek a kind of relationship like that, and is Electra.
Mm.
You know, just look for the Electra and the Oedipus complexes. It's fascinating, because they don't necessarily go away. We think they do, but they don't necessarily go away, believe me. Some of those complexes can linger for a very long time.
Okay, she might have that complex feelings about this, but what does he? What would you? It's like, look, I'm nowhere near 60, and you know, trying to imagine myself being intimately connected with a 19-year-old, or even a 21-year-old. Why?
No, I don't know. Because I'm not. I can't. I mean, I'm 48, and I can't think of a reason why somebody in their 20s. I just cannot think. I mean, maybe I would be surprised at one point, but I'm not. I cannot see myself being attracted that in that way to somebody in their 20s or late teens. Okay. It's just not me.
Mm-mm. Nah. Like, nah. It's, maybe in like 10, 15 years I might see it, but no.
Well, maybe in 10 years we can record an episode about this. Hey, Pat, yeah. Remember we recorded this 10 years ago. How are you now? Well, allow me to introduce you to Maurice, my new toy boy that I just found in eBay for about
$20. Well, he's my masseuse.
Yes. Yes. You realize that this episode is going places, isn't it?
My masseuse is like, okay. Your live-in masseuse. That's what. So if it ever happens, you know.
And he has to be called Maurice, and you know, just the way it goes, or Bruno, one of the two. Sorry.
Was there a reason why never? It's like it's the middle of winter, Paco. Why is he in Speedo?
This is Spain. This is a hot country.
Okay. It's February though. Like, I heard it snow the other day.
I'm sorry, listeners, we can be very inappropriate when we want to. Sometimes yes. We don't want to. As we have proven this episode. Sorry about that.
Look, we apologize to the aromantic people in the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. So sorry to the April 8th people listening to this.
Yeah.
But we're grown people. We're going to make grown people jokes from time to time.
Yeah, sorry. But you realize that this is the kind of episode that some people might listen to, take some serious, deeply, deep offense with, and we get, you know, as in a shit ton of criticism for it that we have to navigate, which would be very deserved, quite frankly. So I'm not going to dish it out.
But we're saying, it's like, listen, as while we're speaking on this trope, Hollywood, please stop. Like,
yeah.
Stop. Like Sean Connery, it's like, may he rest in peace, Sean Connery. But like, that man had no business having female co-stars in their 20s.
You know, I met Sean Connery once.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah, I met him once and he was an asshole. When I was working in Pinewood Studios in 1998 and 99, and he was a complete twat, I'm sorry to say. And a friend of mine worked in a golf course in Marbella during the Ryder Cup a long, long time ago. And he was there and he literally asked her for her phone number because he would not stop looking at her boobs.
Jesse, so, check out to what his reputation was.
Yes, so I'm really sorry, but I have absolutely, even if he's dead, zero respect for Sean Connery. He might have been a hunk in his early years and middle age. He might have had the best Russian-Scottish accent in the whole communist fleet, but he was a sexist motherfucker wonker. Sorry.
Mm.
And now you can hate me for hating Sean Connery. I don't care.
Kind of hard to argue with because misogyny.
Yeah,
I don't want to feel that it was his time shit because I hate it when people pull that on me when I talk about, but he was racist. Or because, I mean, I am a woman, the sexism would probably slap me in the face too. But it's just, I kind of expect older men of a certain age to have certain kinds of gender politics. Not because I think they're all terrible or anything. It's just, how do I say this? In their formative years, it was socially acceptable to be a male chauvinist pig. And unless you actively put in the effort to learn differently, that's going to stick. So I pretty much expect a certain level of male chauvinist pig in boomer men and older, you know, just like kind of a baseline, just to be safe for myself.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, that doesn't mean it's okay when they behave inappropriately. It doesn't. It just means that when I hear about them doing things, I'm not surprised.
True. I am the same. I look at them and think, what did you expect? I don't say it's right. Definitely it isn't right. And definitely somebody should tell him off repeatedly about it. But I cannot say I'm surprised that Sean Connery look at my friend's boobs and ask her for her phone number. I'm not surprised. I think he's an asshole for having done so. And I think she did very well by saying, no, we are not allowed. And now I'm going to go elsewhere where you're not. It is just not. Not surprising. Yeah. It's not acceptable, but it's not surprising. That's the truth.
If she yelled at him and called him a fucking creep, there's no. First of all, I'd be cheering, but
she kind of wanted to keep her job, so she just said, we're not allowed to give our phone numbers to our personal data to any of the guests, and I'm sorry, I have things to do, and she left, and she was very careful not to approach him again throughout. So. That's how it went. So anyway, we've been at it for this for over an hour. What else do we have to discuss?
More things. Romance games. Games that are actually about romance.
Oh, I have two in my mind right away.
Mm.
Okay. One would be Blue Rose, which is not strictly about romance, but it is a game that has been built around romantic fantasy. So right. It's a game built around that, and it has been put into the mechanisms. It's a beautifully done thing, I have to say. Don't ask me about details because I read the book a few years ago. I haven't played it, and I would need to reread it, which I'm not going to do before the end of the show. And the one that I am very curious about is Pasión de Pasiones.
Okay.
Which is essentially a game based on the kind of South American soap operas, which are soap operas full of passion and romance and betrayal and cuckolding and then rediscovering and coming back into things and, you know, finding out that your mother is also your best friend's mother and, you know, where you find an awful lot of times that you're related to the person that you fall in love with. It's that kind of game. So those are the two games that I have in mind that one I need to reread and the other one I need to research.
I looked up several. And I had to like narrow it down. So like these are games specifically about romance. The one that I remembered first was Eagle Hat Productions, Thirsty Sword Lesbians. I know I brought this up. The queer rep episode, but this is the second time this game has come up, and it's like if I hear about it one more time in a completely different context, I gotta get it. So like because I love Revolutionary Girl Utena, I'm definitely into this. Another one are games by Avery Alder, also known as Bird Without Ceremony. There's a game she has called A Place to Fuck Each Other.
That's bold.
And she calls it, yeah, it's a collaboration that's about queer women and the relationships they tentatively build within new spaces. The game unfolds through two types of scenes, hooking up and moving in. Play explores the dissatisfaction that arises from trying to build relationships where needs are only precariously met. As you play, you'll explore a growing web of relationships. So this is basically L Word, the role-playing game. Okay, not really, but I wouldn't dare insult her that way. But just like, it reminds me of the L Word in the sense of being about those, about queer women and new spaces and all that unravels, but without the Jenny Schechter factor. So that's already an improvement. There's a game by Emily Short called, what she called it, something about the moon. Shooting the Moon.
Okay.
It's a tabletop role story game about a romantic triangle. Two suitor characters compete to get something from the third, quote unquote, beloved character. So we have a love triangle. We have like a game specifically like about, you know, queer women's relationships and Thirsty Sword Lesbians. All three of these. So if you, dear listener, have any experience playing any of these games, please comment and tell us what that was like. Because I liked it. Hear about it, and since I'm broke again, I can't just shell out money for new games. So tell us what it was like. Also talk to us about your own experiences with romance and games. Things we overlooked. Well, this is a big topic, so we probably glossed over quite a bit. Things that like we could have that we could go into more detail about, or things you have more experience with. But yeah, I think this is a good place to stop, do you think?
I think so. Also because, wow, it's this is the longest podcast episode we've ever recorded. Over an hour.
We did talk a lot before we started recording.
Well, no, but we've been recording for an hour and 14 minutes, which is, that's aside from the length of time that we were talking, because, you know, listeners, Sean and I talk before and after the show, because, you know, we're kind of friends and stuff like that. So that's what we do. That's what we do.
What?
No, it's weird. So yeah, anyway, yes, it would be great to hear, you know, experiences of players, especially considering the time when this is going to be released. Positive experiences, please. We'd love to hear some positive experiences of romance in your games that have led to memorable and beautiful moments. That would be great to have. Indulge the romantic fools in us, please.
Yes. Thank you. See you next, I guess. Talk to you next time, dear listener.
Indeed.
This is Sean Harris.
And this is Paco.
All right. See you next time.